Do you think life is simpler as time evolves? For some, it can be more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. This is Jill Enders with you. And this week, we're bringing you something, let's just say, a little different. We recently interviewed two pairs of guests who retired abroad. And we thought we would bring you the highlights from those two interviews in one full episode of Elder Talk. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. I think you're going to find our topic this week very, adventurous?
Absolutely. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah. And how many of you have at least entertained the possibility of living abroad? Now, if I were to ask for a show of hands, I would bet that in terms of entertainment, Jill's hand goes right up. In terms of entertainment of an idea, I think probably 90% plus of us have at least fantasized about it. Now, maybe it's a significantly smaller percentage who seriously thought about it, but I think part of that gap may be due to the fact that we don't know anything about it. This seems so foreign to us, no pun intended.
Right.
I mean, it just seems like something that is daunting because it's so unfamiliar. It means something exotic, something that we would have not perhaps done anything similar in our lives. So many people just settle back into their chairs. They keep the familiar, and perhaps their life ends up not being quite of the quality that it might have been. So toward the end of giving us all a little more familiarity with this topic of possibly living abroad, it turns out that there's a publication and a website on international living. Why don't you introduce our guest, Jill?
Yes, and we have the editors from International Living, Susan Haskins and Dan Prescher. And you came up with this 2020 Annual Global Retirement Index, which lists the top countries to retire in.
And before you start into that, though, I want Dan or Susan, tell us a little bit about this publication, and then we want to talk about your list.
You bet.
I can take that question. International Living started back in 1979 as a little, probably four-page black and white newsletter, and we're now a big glossy magazine. I think it's an idea that has sort of resonated with people over the years, especially with baby boomers who are now retiring in great numbers. Basically, we write about places where you can retire and live a better life, we like to say. Live better, spend less. So that's really our mantra, and it's what we try to help people to do, is find places in the world where they can stretch their retirement income, live comfortably and happily.
Tell us what factors you have concluded, based on your decades of experience, people should generally give most consideration to in ranking the places that they would consider.
First of all, I would say you have to profile yourself. You have to really know what you want out of your retirement to begin with. Are you mostly motivated by a lower cost of living? Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about health care? I would suggest that all of us who are approaching retirement age need to be critically concerned about. What about weather? What about the scenery? What do you want to look out of your window and see every morning when you wake up? Do you want to live at a beach? Do you want to live in the mountains? It's almost out of reach for people in the United States to live on a beach. I mean, actually,
yeah.
Out the door and put
and
your toes.
Right.
So it's all those kinds of factors. How close do you want to be to get back home to family and friends? How long of a flight do you want? All of those kinds of things you need to factor in to your decision-making process. I mean, there are a lot of other issues as well. We could go on and on, but those are, I think, the key factors.
And that all of those make sense. I'm sitting here looking, as you went down that list, I just made notes. And I guess if I were preparing my own list – yeah, cost of living, health care, weather, scenery. I mean, those are fundamental things. And access to family here in the U.S. And I guess that would rule out a lot of places if you want to be able to come here frequently to be with your grandkids, for example.
Right.
And I'm curious about that. Are a lot of these retirees that you interviewed, many of them, maybe they don't have children and grandchildren, and that's why they decided to go overseas? Or do you have a mixed bag of retirees?
We definitely have a mixed bag. I would say that most people, probably like all of us, do have children and grandchildren. But what we're finding is that for a lot of families, their children don't live near them anyway. One child, one family might live on the East Coast. Another might live in the middle of the country or close to the West Coast. So they would have to travel to see family in any case. So they're just saying, gosh, if I've got to get on a plane and, you know, go travel for 5 hours to get to see my family, I might as well live somewhere that I want to live.
Yeah, we personally lived in a couple places in Mexico that would have been closer to our family and friends if we had lived on either side of the United States, if we'd been going from New York to Los Angeles. It was much quicker and much easier to get back from Merida, Mexico, which is where we're residents of now.
And how long have you been living there?
We've been actually living overseas for 20 years. So we left the U.S. in 2001. Didn't really, we knew this was something we wanted to do. We weren't close to retirement age at that point in our lives like we are now. But we always had this desire. And again, I think that's one of the critical factors. You have to have a desire for adventure. You have to sort of want to put yourself in a different culture, learn a different language, enjoy new experiences. So
that sense of adventure is critically important, because if you're just moving for a lower cost of living, if you're just moving because you can't afford health care, that kind of makes you a refugee. You should have some curiosity, some love for the place that you want to go and try out.
Now, are many of the people who are reading your periodical and with which you interact, are these people mainly buying properties in these places they go, or do they typically rent?
It's a mixed bag. People who think that they're going to be there for long term, for 5 years or so, will often buy. Others will rent and maybe try out a place for a while. And we really suggest that.
Right.
Go there, rent, see if you like it. You may find that the neighborhood that you picked for your first stop isn't the place where you want to live. Maybe you start to become with friends who live on the other side of town and you want to move over there. So when places are unfamiliar, you want to start slowly and sort of make your way. So we recommend that you rent before you buy, but that hasn't always been the case for us. I will tell you that.
You know, I'm curious about something. Do you have any data that shows how many retirees stay in these foreign countries? Because I can imagine as they get older and develop serious health problems like Alzheimer's or dementia, they may move back to the States so they can be closer to family.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, we see that. We see a lot of people who, as they start to, you know, reach their late 70s, early 80s, they end up coming home. I'm also seeing a lot of people who come home to take care of aging parents.
Yeah,
because you know, a lot of people who are going overseas right now are in their 60s, and by the time they've spent a few years overseas, their parents need them back home. So we're also seeing that kind of thing.
Retirement has just changed. The nature of retirement has changed over the years. And a lot of people now who reach what used to be standard retirement age may have two or three more life stages to go through, including health challenges or grandchildren or even wanderlust. I mean, it's not like jumping off a cliff. You don't just pick a place to become an expat and you have to live with that for the rest of your life. We know people who've relocated 3, 4, 5 times.
Like us.
Like us. It's a lifestyle, yeah.
And you know, you can see that same process in moving to Florida, for example,
exactly.
Where I at one time thought that a decision to move or retire to Florida would be a one-way trip. And we've talked more than once on this show about ourselves and clients whose parents may have moved to Florida, and they enjoy this window of time. So rather than being a permanent move, instead it's a window of time in which they have a marvelous a life, presumably, living in Florida. But there does come that time, usually, that if their loved ones are back in Minneapolis or Chicago or wherever it might be, often the parents, as they become more frail, will typically go back. And as you point out, it could be even children, if it's children that have moved away to some place where they return eventually to where their parents are to take care of their parents. So
exactly.
I assume that that's the same process that we're talking about when people move internationally.
Yeah, and you mentioned Florida. Susan has always said becoming an expat and moving abroad for retirement really isn't much different than moving from Minneapolis to Coral Gables. Just think a little farther south.
Yeah.
Think of Mexico. Think of Panama. Think of Ecuador. You broaden your range of imagination. It's not that much different, though.
Right. I want to say one more thing about this, getting older, though. We are also seeing a lot of assisted living centers cropping up in overseas destinations that are far more affordable than we have in the United States. So we're also seeing a trend of people moving into those kinds of facilities where they can actually live a very comfortable life for, $3,000 all in and get nursing care, et cetera, which is really hard to find here.
Yeah, we have seen people move out of the United States for affordable in-home care and end-of-life care. So there's that consideration as well.
Wow. So $3,000 all in, you're talking about $3,000 a month?
Yeah, I'm sorry. $3,000 a month. There are many assisted living centers in Mexico, for instance, that we know about where you can have a private room, somebody to feed your or make your meals for you and to help you with your healthcare needs, clean your place.
Full on assisted living. Yeah, full on assisted living.
How does the quality of care, would you say, compare to that in the United States?
Well, I would say that I'm probably not really familiar with the quality of care in either place as I would be if I had a parent in one of these places, for instance. But the people that we know who live in them and who we know people who are living in the Lake Chapala area, which has been a top retirement destination in Mexico for generations, in fact, and who have parents in some of these facilities, and they're very happy with them. So, I can say that that's my anecdotal sort of evidence that they are good facilities. Yeah. And, the people who work in these facilities tend to be very caring.
And again, you can't make blanket statements because quality varies wildly
in the
United States. So it's bound to vary wildly outside the United States as well. But there is, at least in Latin American countries that Susan and I are familiar with, a deep cultural respect for elders. And that's something you don't find a lot around the United States anymore, where we seem to be happy to warehouse our older folks.
It's no longer fashionable to be old.
Yeah.
Right.
In effect, in the U.S. So
I'm curious, too, about citizenship. What happens? Are you allowed dual citizenship with these countries that are on your list?
You are, but most people don't apply for citizenship. Most people just get a resident visa, and you can live in a resident visa pretty much permanently in most of these countries. Many of them have different types of visas, but people rarely apply for citizenship. We know some who have, of course, but most people just get a resident visa. And
we've almost never seen anybody renounce their U.S. citizenship.
No.
There's just no reason to do that. You don't have to. You can happily be a resident of a foreign country and retain your U.S. citizenship with no trouble at all.
And there were some surprises on this list, such as Vietnam. I would not think of that as being a place to retire.
Well, now let's start out in an orderly way here, Jill. So how many countries are on this list?
Top 24. The top 24 are what we're concentrating on this year, I think.
Okay, so let's talk about the top five. Jill, is Vietnam in the top five?
No, Vietnam's at the bottom.
At the bottom, but it's number 20.
It's number 10, yeah.
Okay, number 10, bottom of the list you're looking at. So, okay, then let's start with the top 10. So there we go, Jill. Let's start with Vietnam. How did Vietnam make the list?
We have correspondents there who are on the ground and given us really good detailed reports of what it's like to live there. And it's one of the most affordable places on the planet to live that still has good infrastructure and good quality of life. You can live a lot of places that are really, really cheap, but Vietnam has good infrastructure and good services as well. And now that we have somebody there who's reporting directly to us, we know what a great place it is. And we're in contact with the expat community there. They're very welcoming, very friendly, very business-oriented, and all around a good place to live if you really want bang for buck.
Going back to the list, so we had Vietnam at number 10. What's number 9?
France. And the European countries are always placing on the list just because the quality of life is familiar. The culture is familiar.
Right.
But what about cost of living? I would think it would be expensive to live in most countries.
In Paris, it certainly is.
Right. Once you get outside of Paris and other major cities, I mean, you can live very affordably if you live in the French countryside. But you will see that it doesn't rank at the top of our cost of living. So, you know, if you want to have a good quality of life, look at France. But it's not going to be the cheapest place to live.
I assume in this top 10, how many other European countries do we have?
We've got Spain.
Oh, Spain's great.
Yeah.
Now, isn't Spain less expensive than, generally speaking, than France?
It is generally. And the language considerations are different, but transportation, you've got Madrid, Barcelona, you can get in and out easily, just like France. Almost any place in Europe is going to have a very cosmopolitan lifestyle. That goes for Portugal, too, which was at the top of the retirement index this year.
And really? Again, number one?
Yeah, it topped the list. We have a lot of people now who are telling us that the quality of life, the cost of living, the closeness to European culture makes Portugal just a wonderful place to live.
Let's talk about what Central American countries are on this list in the top 10.
Panama is number 2 and has been almost perennially. It's always been 1 or 2 just because North Americans have been living there for a century with the Panama Canal. And Panama City is like Miami South. It's a huge cosmopolitan city. People from all over the world live there. It's really easy to settle into, which makes Panama a perennial favorite. Costa Rica is right behind that because Costa Rica has a brand of its own. It's a natural paradise. Almost 100% carbon neutral now. They really value their environment. And Mexico, there are probably more North American expats in Mexico than any other place, just because it's convenient, it's easy to get to, and people are familiar with it.
I tell you, Dan and Susan, with International Living, a marvelous source of information. Is the website simply internationalliving.com?
That's it
exactly.
Okay. I encourage our listeners, if we've teased you with this concept and you're curious, as I am, quite frankly, that you go to the website and check it out. We thank you, Susan, Dan, for your wealth of information. Thank you. I wish you the best. Enjoy the sunshine.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Back in a moment with Elder Talk.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
We want to continue our discussion about international living. And we've done a wonderful show in which we've had guests who were editors, in fact, founders of International Living Newsletter and Now Magazine. Immensely popular, Dan Prescher and Suzanne Haskins. So we want to provide, though, more actual information for those of you who might be considering living abroad. And we thought, what better way to do that than to talk to people who are actually living abroad and who've done this, and even as we speak, are doing this. And toward that end, Jill, why don't you introduce our guests?
Yes, we have James and Jennifer Haskins, who have retired in Mexico. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Now, what made you decide to retire in Mexico, of all the countries where you could have retired?
I think that we started visiting there a number of years ago with family and had wonderful family holidays and fell in love with the people in Mérida. And like that pace of life, that style of life. And so when we decided to retire, which we retired early, that was just seemed like a perfect place to go.
So where did you live in the U.S.?
We lived in Northwest Arkansas.
Okay. So going Arkansas to Mexico must be quite a change.
Yes, it was.
This area that you mentioned in Mexico, Mérida?
Yes.
Where is that in Mexico?
It's in the Yucatan, the state of Yucatan. So basically, we explain to people if you put a boat in New Orleans and floated directly across the Gulf, you'd run into the Yucatan Peninsula. It's about 30 minutes inland.
And you have a lot of coastline.
Yes, you do.
So are you living on the coast?
We're not. We live in a colonial city about 30 minutes in from the coast.
So I want to know more, Jennifer, about your life in Arkansas so we can kind of set the context for this change. Were you employed at the time you decided to move? You said you retired early, and I'm trying not to ask you your age when you retired, but I really want to give our audience, you know, a sense of what your circumstances were when you made this, some would consider, bold decision.
Sure. Well, I worked for Walmart and had an opportunity to be deployed as an expat overseas in the last 8 years. And my husband had actually was in law enforcement and retired to travel with me overseas.
And what did you do for Walmart?
I was an attorney doing our ethics and compliance program in southern China and South Africa.
Now, that's very different from Mexico. Did you spend any time in Mexico, though, in your employment?
Not in my employment, no. We just traveled there on holiday.
So you, though, got a comfort with living abroad by virtue of your employment, I guess, through Walmart, your opportunity to see it up close while you're still employed with your job prior to retirement.
Yes.
So that does set a little bit of a context. And then you had the opportunity to retire early. So can I assume that you're in your 50s?
That would be correct. I actually retired 1 month shy of 50.
Wow.
Now that's pretty impressive. I'm tempted to do another show here and talk about how do you plan to retire by 50. That's an interesting show. But in any case, we'll stick with this one. But in fairness, though, let me hurry to add, you were probably able to do retirement in part because of the cost savings associated with living outside the U.S. So in a way, that enabled you perhaps to retire in circumstances that maybe you wouldn't have been as willing to with the cost of living in the U.S. Is that true?
Absolutely.
And Jim and Jennifer, can you give us, paint a picture, what a typical day is like for you as retirees in Mexico?
Sure. Well, my husband likes to golf, so many mornings he's out golfing early with his friends, and I work as a volunteer in our local English language library there in Mérida. And so we'll spend time doing volunteer work. We spend a lot of time just relaxing, if you can believe that or not. Just really, Mérida is a very vibrant city with lots of music and arts opportunities. So we spend a lot of time going out in the evenings and listening to, you know, music of all different genres, attending art and theater productions. So, you know, we have a very rich and fulfilling life like that.
So are there a lot of expats there then? You mentioned that Jim goes out and plays golf with his friends. Are these Americans predominantly?
Yes. There's a large, relatively large, Canadian and American population of expats in Mérida.
These are people who tend to live in the same communities. Do you have gated communities that are largely expats?
No, actually, there really are very few gated communities in the area where we live. We live actually in the historical Centro of Mérida, which was a city founded in the 1500s.
And with our last guest from International Living, the editors, they said you have to have a sense of adventure to do this. Do you agree with that?
Yes, definitely.
So what about your language skills? Do you speak Spanish a lot better than you did before? And how well did you speak Spanish when you got there?
We really would not have been, I would say, functional speakers. But we have improved, but are certainly not where we want to be.
So it's not critical for someone to live where you live for them to be especially good at Spanish. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. I think there's so many translation apps and opportunities today that honestly, you know, you can make do. Please don't misunderstand me, Joe. You would have a much richer life if you could fully understand everything going on around you. But it's certainly, we are able to live a very comfortable and happy life with the language skills that we have, which are certainly not, you know, fluent.
I have to ask, what did your family and friends say when you decided to make this huge move?
Most of them thought we were crazy. We had already shocked our family by going overseas twice, you know, before. So they were, I would say, maybe a little numb to the shock. But certainly with our friends and coworkers, people that I'd worked with, there was a lot of shock and, you know, surprise that we would, I would say, give up kind of the, a lot of people would ask me, you know, how are you going to do without things? And I said, like what? There's, you know, three Sam's Clubs and a Costco in Merida. I'm not going to do without anything.
Right.
So I think it's just a lot of ignorance on people's part about what moving to Mexico would involve. And the fact that we were doing it so young, they thought we'd be bored and not have anything to do with our time, you know, live in a dirt pueblo, which is certainly far, far from what reality is.
Do you ever get homesick?
Sure. I think there are times we get homesick. I mean, holidays, and we do try to come back to the U.S., you know, a couple of times a year, see our family. But I would say that with modern technology, texting and you know, FaceTime, Skype, all of these communication opportunities, it's so easy to stay in touch. We talk to our daughter, who's 24, every day. You know, we're not alone and we don't feel like we're isolated.
Were you concerned about crime in Mexico generally? And to what extent is there any crime in your specific area?
Well, I should let my husband, the former law enforcement officer, answer.
Oh, I should be asking him.
Yeah.
Really, Merida and the Yucatan is one of the safest states in the whole of Mexico. It's safe enough that we have kids and grandkids that come down and, you know, can walk the streets at night, and we're not worried at all about the crime.
So you're familiar with what areas to stay out of that may
be
high crime?
Yeah, in the city of Merida, it's a city of almost 800,000 people, and you know, it's like any large city in the U.S. that there are places that you would take extra precautions going to, especially at night or, you know, whatever. But no, Merida is one of the safest cities. You know, it's like the safest city, second safest city in all of the Americas. So we're not scared at all.
From a healthcare standpoint, do you come to the U.S. for your healthcare, or is there good healthcare nearby?
To tell you the truth, that's one of the reasons why we came to Mexico early. The cost of healthcare in the U.S. is, you know, something that we didn't think we'd be able to afford. So we have a health insurance plan in Mexico that covers us throughout the world, but we're paying a quarter of the price that we would have had we'd been in the U.S. And there's seven hospitals in Merida with a lot of U.S. trained doctors, and the healthcare is just as good there as it is in the U.S., I believe.
So you're at the same latitude approximately as, say, New Orleans, or that would extend to Florida about where? I'm wondering what latitude.
It'd be about Miami.
Okay.
Equivalent.
So I guess then that means, Jim, you get to play a lot of golf down there.
Yes, it's year-round.
And I assume, though, it's very hot in the summer, or would you say that the summers are not as hot as maybe we would associate with Miami, or should we expect the same?
I've never lived in Miami, but from about mid-March or April till September, it's brutally hot in Merida. The humidity is very high, and it's very hot. It's a colonial city, so it seems like the concrete holds the heat in a little bit better mm-hmm. in Merida. So, but it is hot. It is hot throughout the summer, and that's why Merida has a large contingent of what we call snowbirds that come down in probably October from the northern, usually the northern parts of the U.S. and Canada, and stay until, you know, March or April, and then they go home, and the rest of us fight the heat in the summer, but we do that with cold drinks and swimming pools.
Is air conditioning ubiquitous there like it is in southern Florida? I often complain in southern Florida that I wear a sweater much of the time in the summer, because any building you go into, the temperature is set at about 67 degrees. Is a similar thing there?
It is. We and the Mexicans stay inside usually during the hot part of the days, and then everybody goes out later in the evening. So
when it cools off, right?
Yeah, air conditioning is almost a must, especially for us foreigners.
Now, do you plan to stay there permanently, or at some point as you get older, do you plan to come back to the States where you can be closer to family?
Right now, the plan is we have no plan to go back to the U.S. at this point. Of course, you know, maybe at some point we both have mothers that are still living in Northwest Arkansas that, you know, Merida has an international airport and there's daily flights to Houston. So we can get home if we need to fairly quickly. But we, you know, we have a house down there. We do not have a house now in the U.S., so Merida is home for us. So at this point, until I can, you know, maybe I start drawing Social Security or, you know, Medicare or something, it's going to be, we're going to plan on staying in Merida.
So I'm curious, have these friends come down to visit you?
All the time, especially during the winter.
Now, I bet.
Do you have any converts among them?
Well, most of our friends are all on that hamster wheel of work, and they just, you know, they're not ready to give that up. And I think for us, for Jennifer and I, our youngest was out of college, and we got her out of school, and I had been retired for a number of years because we had lived overseas. And I think Jennifer got jealous of me not having an agenda, not having to get up and go to work on Monday. So we retired young, and most of those people are still doing the 9-to-5 back home. So
now let's talk briefly about real estate. And okay. you may not be that familiar with it, but to buy, for example, property that would be very close or on a beach in the Yucatan Peninsula, can you give us some sense for the contrast that probably exists between those prices and what we all know we would run into in Florida? Certainly California.
We own some beach lots on the coast of the Yucatan. We don't have a house there, but prices for a home on the coast in the Yucatan versus the prices of a home in Florida are just really night and day. You could probably buy a nice home for, you know, $150,000 to $200,000 U.S. in Mexico versus, you know, hundreds, if not millions of dollars in Florida.
And this is on the coast?
This is on the coast, yes.
Wow. On the coast for a couple hundred thousand bucks. That is unusual.
Yes. It is, yeah.
Yeah, we have some friends who just bought a place on the coast. And, I mean, they're on the beachfront, and they're less than $200,000 U.S.
What about everyday things like groceries? How would that compare, the cost of groceries in Mexico to, say, where you were in Arkansas?
So I would say some things are not that much less expensive, but on average, when we first moved, we kind of did some comparisons. I would say we're anywhere from, you know, a third cheaper to a half.
Wow.
That is a big difference. And what would be significant expenses in the U.S., such as utilities? How do those compare?
You know, we pay maybe for our water, which our bills come every 2 months. So we probably pay around $20 for a 2 month period of water. So $10 a month. And we have to, as part of our own commitment to the environment, installed solar panels on our home. And our electric bill was 50 cents a month with our solar panels in. So,
50 cents a month.
50 cents a month.
I have to ask you, but putting in the solar panels, how much does that run ballpark?
We put in a large contingency so we could run our air conditioning anytime we wanted, Joe. But I think we spent around 10,000 U.S. outlay on the solar setup.
That really pays for itself.
Well, yeah, 50 cents a month for electricity.
What about fuel costs? You have, I assume your cars are not electric. You use probably gasoline, right?
Yeah, gas is just a little bit more expensive down in Mexico than the U.S. But again, I'm driving to the golf course and back, or maybe I'm going to, you know, the local grocery store, but I'm not driving back and forth to work. And, you know, so I'm not driving as much down there, but insurance and all that is cheaper, of course, but gas is just a little bit more expensive because it's mostly state owned by the government. Most of the gas stations.
So in your case, you may travel occasionally for vacations on weekends and whatnot. Where would you go if you're going to take a vacation and you're already in Mexico?
Well, I went a couple weeks ago, me and a couple of guys that I golf with, and we went over to Campeche, which is another city over on the west side of the Yucatan, which is about a 2.5 hour drive. And we played a beautiful golf course over there. A couple months ago, me and Jennifer met some family members over by Cancun and took a ferry over to Isla Mujeres, which is a little island off of Cancun. So there's plenty. There's ruins, Mayan ruins, and there's cenotes, and there's all sorts of things around us within a, you know, an hour drive that, you know, when people come down to visit, that's what we do. We take them around those places.
And when you first moved there, did you ever go through a period where you question, what am I doing? Why did we do this? Was this a mistake?
Yes, we did. I did because I left working, you know, a pretty intense job for, to kind of go, you know, almost to a standstill. And it did take a lot to kind
that
of
was
let
shot
go
to the system,
feeling right?
Like feeling like you had to be on all the time.
Yeah.
Quite an adjustment.
Yeah. But, you know, I went and had a margarita or two and, you know, let that go.
So, but how do you fill your time now?
You know, I do. People ask us that. We do whatever we want when we want. I mean, we walk around into grocery stores and markets. Your daily life is a little different. I read a lot of books. We do volunteer work both with children's orphanages and with the English library there. As Jim said, he golfs a lot. So, you know, we somehow manage to fill every day.
Just like anybody who's retired here in the U.S., same thing.
Exactly.
It's right. Your new.
Right.
Well, it just seems, though, that most people, when they think about retirement, they get really spooked about the idea of going outside the United States because they feel like they're going to be vulnerable. And the good thing about making this decision as early as you can is that, you know, you're going at a time when you're less vulnerable, when, as you pointed out, Jim, you're less likely to need health care services,
right,
or significant health care. So it's really it's important, in my opinion, for people to think about this as soon as they can if they want to do this internationally.
Sure. I would agree with that. You know, one of the caveats I would put on that, though, is, you know, take some trips overseas, see what you're comfortable with, you know, because a lot of people, they'll jump into it. We've met a number of people that have seen House Hunter shows from Merida, or they come because they see something on TV, and, you know, they might come with a different idea and they don't last a long time. So I would highly recommend, you know, take some trips to different places and kind of get a feel for what you like and what you can put up with.
Yeah.
Research is critical.
Sure.
So let me ask you this. If you hadn't settled there, where might you have settled? Or put differently, what other places were on your short list when you were deciding you were going to go international?
Yeah, so I think when we were deciding where to go, remember we had just come back from 2 years in South Africa. So South Africa, particularly the Cape Town area, ranked high on our list. Mm-hmm. But we also, you know, we had traveled to Italy and Germany in the past and enjoyed those places. We had thought about potentially Spain and Portugal. Mexico was very appealing just because it is so close to the United States. And with our mothers getting up in age, we really wanted to make sure we could get home relatively quickly without a transoceanic flight. So those were other places we would look at. But, you know, all of which have wonderful things to offer for people who are willing to take a risk.
I hear that people who succeed when they live internationally, that they tend to have a mindset that they're not going to be critical about the things where they are that are different from the U.S., that, you know, there are some people who simply can't let go whenever they're living somewhere else of this continual comparisons in which, in their judgment, the new place fails the comparison. And they, as long as they have that mindset and keep pointing out deficiencies around them, that they never quite settle in versus an attitude that's more tolerant, permissive, not judgmental. Did you go through a period where you had to let go of some of that? And I know you had experience living internationally that a lot of people do not. But isn't there that tendency to continually or at least often be aware of how things are, this particular thing is not handled the way we did it in the United States and the U.S. was better? Is there some of that?
Yeah. There is. I mean, I think you have your kind of comparator, what's your norm, and you're always, you know, comparing that. For a long, long time, we would do everything and convert that to U.S. dollars in our mind when the peso, you know, instead of just automatically thinking in terms of paying in pesos or whatever. I do think that to really enjoy the experience, you have to see the beauty in where you are. And sometimes that's, you know, as a compliance professional, as I mentioned earlier, you know, food safety, there are things that we would not allow in our country in the United States that are normal and natural and part of their culture in terms of the way they eat or they handle their food. You can live your life in a bubble and be constantly freaked out about things, or you can just really go in and enjoy the experience. And that's how we choose to live our life. We constantly are doing the comparator now in the reverse, like how beautiful it is. And doesn't this remind you of the U.S. in a time when it was less frantic, you know, more neighbors involved and more community and things of that nature? So we're actually doing that comparison a little bit in the reverse at this stage.
I have to ask this question before we wrap up. You said there are a variety of restaurants and whatnot there, which I don't doubt, but I do doubt that there would be the rich variety of cuisines that you have in the U.S. That I live in St. Louis, and I can go out and have Vietnamese food, which I love, or any number of other Asian foods. Is that also true in your area?
It is. I mean, we have Vietnamese at our Slow Food Market. We have P.F. Chang's and every kind of Italian place you could want. You know, I mean, it's just, yes.
That is interesting. See, it's so contrary to our stereotypes. And many people, when they think of Mexico, they're thinking of what they're seeing on the evening news, which is never good. We were thinking about opening an office, not real seriously, but we at least got at the very exploratory stage. And we looked at Mexico City and Cordell & Cordell is a domestic relations firm. And the reason that the conversation ended very quickly was that we, you know, just heard things we would have to pay insurance for, kidnapping insurance and all this. And it spooked us. And many people tend to extrapolate that and apply it to all of Mexico. And as you point out, Mexico City is a very different place from the Yucatan Peninsula.
It is. And that's why we were saying really do your research and know, because where we live is a place where actually the rest of Mexico sends their law enforcement and folks to learn and study how to keep the peace and to be a role model of good community relations so they don't have issues. But I mean, certainly there are places we wouldn't go. We wouldn't travel there as tourists and we wouldn't want to live there. But that's no different than there are some places we would be leery of going in the U.S. So
right.
I think before you make a life-changing decision like this to retire overseas, go to that place. And it helps if you've gone more than once, maybe in different seasons, so you can get a flavor for, you know, how that works. Mexico, where we are, is Merida's hot. So a lot of people come in the winter and they love it. And then, you know, July hits and they're miserable. So
you all are very articulate advocates and teachers, I should say, not just advocates, because you present a very fair picture. So, Jim and Jennifer Haskins, it's been marvelous. Time flies when we're doing this segment. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. Till next week, take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Ellen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future, with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Sponsored by Tucker Ellen, your estate and elder law advisors. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Tucker Ellen. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.